Hi, Fresh from the Hill listeners. I'm really excited for our third episode in our SIBA series featuring Eric Elmore and Ernie Jolly and their discussion with John about Alpha Phi Alpha, the first intercollegiate historically African-American Greek-lettered fraternity. I wanted to jump on quick before the episode begins to give you the heads up that there are a few audio issues in this one. Nothing major, but I wanted you to be aware before jumping in so it doesn't take away from your listening experience. It's yet another inspiring and fascinating conversation, and I really hope you enjoy.
Hello, Cornelians. Welcome to another episode of Fresh from the Hill, inside stories of noteworthy Cornelians. I'm John Rollins III, class of 2006, and the 16th president of the Cornell Black Alumni Association. On today's episode, we are taking a look at Cornell history that has impacted the world for more than 114 years, and one that is near and dear to my heart, and that is Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, the first intercollegiate Greek letter fraternity established for African-American men. My guests today are two Cornellians who joined the fraternity through the Alpha chapter at Cornell. We have Eric Elmore, class of 86 and class of 89 from the law school, and Ernie Jolly, class of 2009. Brothers, welcome to Fresh from the Hill.
Oh, thank you so much, John.
So before we jump into more about the fraternity, I do want to start out, you know, allowing our guests an opportunity to get to know each of you. And as I ask every guest, I'm going to ask the two of you. So Eric, if you can go first, what brought you to Cornell? What was your first interaction with the institution? And why did you decide that Cornell was the place for you?
Well, I was a very active student in high school. And I had a lot of sort of mentors, if you will, that were a few years ahead of me. One of the students at my high school went to Cornell. So that sort of put Cornell in the back of my mind. Then as it got closer to, you know, applying to colleges, I basically tracked a lot of colleges that friends of mine who were older than me went to. A number of schools I applied to in New York City, including the some schools in the city, University of New York. But I really wanted to get away from home, but be close enough that I could get back fairly quickly. So I applied to some schools out of state and Cornell, which is upstate New York, which was actually an advantage because it was an outstanding school. It was a bit of a reach school for me. I wasn't sure I was going to get in, but it was my number one choice. It was about 4.5 to 5 hours drive from New York City. So that satisfied the criteria of being relatively close to home, but sort of far enough from home that when my family wanted to see me, they had to call first. So that was kind of cool for me. And I like that it also had a classic, what I saw as college campus, because I grew up in a major, you know, urban area in New York City in Queens, New York. My high school is in Manhattan. So it was important to me to get what I saw as a classic college town campus experience where I could be independent, but within a safety net of a college town.
Ernie, I'll ask you the same question. What brought you to Cornell and why did you feel that it was the place for you?
Yeah, I've learned about Cornell through a high school counselor who set up a trip to Cornell for a number of the students from my high school. And my high school is pretty diverse, mostly African-American, good number of Latinos and a number of Asian-Americans as well. Either way, she set up this trip for us to go to Cornell. It was in October, and it was probably the most beautiful place that, you know, I've ever been at that time in my life. The leaves were beautiful all on the ground, and almost like a autumn utopia in a lot of ways. It was a diversity hosting weekend. And I was able to stay with African American gentlemen from the South, and he introduced me to a lot of the folks in the black community at Cornell and attended events. There were little mixers, and everyone struck me as extremely intelligent, but also extremely excited to be there. It was probably because the prelims hadn't started yet, but folks generally looked happy, and I remember that vividly. you know, after that trip, I was almost obsessed with Cornell and wanted to go there. I would go to the Barnes & Noble store in Brooklyn, Court Street, downtown Brooklyn, just to read, you know, the various college manuals, read up on what the different books said about Cornell, because I was very interested in getting in. It was my number one choice, like Mr. Elmore said, and luckily I got in, and I remember that day as well. I think it was either the last day of April or the first day of May. Went online and found out that I got in, which, you know, wasn't expected, but was very exciting news for a kid.
John, may I add one additional thing to my answer?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Ernie kind of prompted something that I maybe had blocked out my memory, but when I was applying to a number of colleges, Cornell was my top choice, and I was, you know, president of the student body. I was very active and stuff. My grades were, you know, I thought very good, decent. And I was, you know, got a Regents diploma, which is sort of the higher degree awarded in New York City schools. But when I applied, my college advisor, the guidance counselor at my high school, said I shouldn't apply. And I sort of asked why. And she says, well, you didn't want to disappoint yourself. And, you know, you'll probably be very hard. You probably won't get in. So you should, you know, apply to CUNY, which is, you know, open admissions for most of the city university units there, as well as other schools that were less of a reach. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was like kind of put off by that. But, you know, I knew if I didn't apply what the result was, I wouldn't get in. So I said, you know, what was sort of the harm in me trying to apply, you know? So I went ahead and applied, and I'm glad I did. But I do recall that she discouraged. It was sort of a benign thing. She just didn't want me to be disappointed. But in some ways, it was sort of holding me back. And I'm glad I did listen and went ahead with applying, as well as my mother encouraged me to apply as well.
Absolutely. I mean, very clearly you made the right choice. And all, I think Cornell, and I can even speak for you and I, were all the better for it that you were at Cornell before us even paved the way, I'll say. So I'm really glad that you shared that.
So I also want to let the audience know, as I mentioned before, the history and this organization are very, very near and dear to my heart, because I am also a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. I was initiated into the organization in the spring of 2007 through the Iota Iota Lambda chapter of Alpha, which is actually the graduate chapter seated in Ithaca, New York. So I've been a member at this point for 14 years and actually had the privilege of being the fraternity's first director for leadership development and training at our international headquarters in Baltimore, Maryland. So I've got to see the organization from a pretty high level and had some amazing experiences that have shaped me as a person and as a member of the fraternity. So I'm going to now turn it back to you, Eric. Share with our audience a little bit about the history of our beloved Alpha Phi Alpha.
Well, Alpha Phi Alpha, as I think you mentioned early on, is the first intercollegiate fraternity for African Americans, particularly African American males. It was founded at Cornell University on a Tuesday, December 4th, 1906. We have seven founders that we affectionately refer to as Jewels. All were attending Cornell University, with a few other Black African Americans attending Cornell, which shocks a lot of people in the early 1900s at Cornell. Was one of the few schools of its kind that accepted a diverse group of students. It famously touts the any person, any study model. But Cornell was true to that, wanting sort of to be egalitarian with people from different backgrounds, including women, at almost its founding. Well, around 1900, our fraternity founders saw other models on campus, fraternities in particular, of which they were not allowed to be members. Many of our founders and other members worked in those fraternity houses, saw the benefits of those fraternity houses, not only the social and fellowship aspect, which, as anyone who goes to school in Ithaca, New York, Cornell, New York, is really important to support one another, but also the academic support, for example, old exams were available for students in those fraternity houses to help support them. Cornell was well known for a lot of students not doing well when they went it alone, but when they studied with other folks, they tended to be more successful and support one another. Many of our initial fraternity members, our founders, saw the benefits of that support for the mainstream fraternities and wanted it for themselves, but they weren't allowed because of social segregation, if you will, to join those organizations. So they took it upon themselves to create their own in a way that was culturally relevant to them. So they formed what we all affectionately know was a social study club, because those are very common where people interact with each other and support and study together, as well later on a literary society. But they found those two weren't enough. They wanted more greater support than, as a history book says, the classroom setting would allow. So they actually went on and formed the third stage of an organization, which was the fraternity. And that, I think many of us can attest to, is what helps support us through it could be a very cold environment. I don't mean just literally, but figuratively, in terms of social atmosphere. So the need to come together among students was pronounced, much like other schools, and even more so in Ithaca, New York. And our seven founders and some others came together and eventually formed the first Black intercollegiate fraternity for men at Cornell University.
Which is always, for me, just an amazing thing to think about as we think about, you know, all these years later, and we've seen, and we'll talk a little while about the impact of Alpha and even other organizations of Vine Nine a little bit later. But if you just think about the fact that it was founded and started at our institution, is something I'm very, very proud of. And I know you all share that same sentiment with me. Ernie, I'm going to come to you. Tell us a little bit about your involvement while you were at Cornell. Then Eric, I'll ask you the same question. I know you've done some work on the national level as well. But Ernie, I want to start with you. I know you're currently the president of our Alpha Chapter Alumni Association. But go back to your days on the yard. Tell us a little bit about your involvement, Ernie, what you all did that you can, you know, remember.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go back to that diversity hosting week. And when I visited the campus during that weekend, I was able to interact with a number of individuals that were campus leaders, including yourself, John. But one of the speakers during that weekend of events was a gentleman named Justin Davis, who was at the time a RA, a leader in the Black Students United, et cetera. And he struck me as a model of the kind of student that, you know, I would want to be if I had the opportunity to attend a Cornell. And that's kind of what I did. I got into university, was assigned to Clara Dixon, but specifically the multicultural live and learning unit in Clara Dixon. Obviously couldn't be a RA because I was a freshman, but I did sign up to be a program manager of sorts in my dorm as a freshman, and hosted a number of events around multiculturalism and race in America. And that kind of got my feet wet in organizing things, whether that's events or people. And continue to be very active on the campus through organizations like the Black Students United, where I eventually became president, also became an RA, and, you know, did a host of other activities or jobs on campus that helped me develop, you know, my leadership skills, which I think I draw on until this, you know, till this day. I mean, in my current job as a chief of staff for a member of Congress, you know, there's often times where, you know, I would have to organize a host of different people around a specific issue. And I often think back to, you know, that freshman year where I was forced to learn how to get people engaged on an issue you may be passionate about and how to get their alignment, you know, with whatever your agenda is. And I pull on that experience often. Eventually, I was able to become an alpha as well. And that experience at Cornell was important, as, you know, there are a number of opportunities provided through the fraternity, including oratorical contests and other sort of developmental kind of programs, which was very important for me. Generally being a, you know, generally shy, low-key type of person, I would say Cornell, all the organizations I were a part of at Cornell, you know, mentors like Brother Elmore and Brother Rollins on this call, all forced me to kind of develop those skills and kind of, you know, grow out of my shell. And so I'm super appreciative of the, you know, that opportunity provided at Cornell and in various groups and the people that are associated with Cornell.
Absolutely. Someone who remembers Ernie from the pre-freshman summer of 2005, I will attest that he is definitely growing out of that shell. You, Eric, I'll give you the opportunity again. Talk a little about your involvement with Alpha at Cornell and again, our fraternity as a whole.
Oh, yes. Well, I came to Cornell from a single parent household, predominantly Black neighborhood in Jamaica, Queens, going to sort of the opposite, a sort of a mainstream university, Ivy League university. Many of the people I felt, not only as a minority or Black student and sort of less represented up there, but also I went to a high school, a public high school, and many of the people around me went to prep school. So I even felt a little isolated then when we were introducing ourselves freshman year. And I said I went to Murray Bertram High School in New York City, whereas other people went to, you know, these private schools and stuff. So that also made me feel a little isolated too, going into a predominantly a white environment. And there were two people from my high school that went to apply to Cornell, me and somebody else were there. And that's out of a class of almost 1,000 people. So I felt isolated in that regard. So it was a bit of a change from my high school, which was like Ernie's, a diverse high school, slightly more African American, but it had Latinos, Asian Americans as well. My high school is located near Chinatown. So it was really a diverse high school. This is the first time I'm in an overwhelmingly white environment. So that was a bit of a shock. But when I got there, I noticed there were different types of things going on. The white Greek system, pretty large. I was in a big red band, and many fraternities of the mainstream white fraternities, they did recruit from band members, but I kind of didn't have a connection or interest in them. It just social things. I don't drink. I didn't drink band, you know, types of things that I enjoy and stuff. It just didn't really seem like a good fit. And then I saw, I was introduced to a number of fraternities and sororities that were Black. Now, when I went to Cornell, the only fraternity I was aware of was Phi Beta Kappa, which, you know, is now an honor society. But and then some of the things that you saw are the fraternities on TV, like Animal House. So I had no idea of any Black fraternity that was before School Day, that was before Stomp the Yard. So then I got to meet some of the Black fraternities like Phi Beta Sigma. They also had an intake group that was coming in when I was a freshman year. Then I got to meet members of Mega Psi Phi. You know, they were pretty active, very social, barking a lot as their mantra. And then some of the Black sororities I saw up there as well, Delta AKA, and then later Zeta started up there. And then I got to see some members of this fraternity who were in Alpha Phi Alpha. Now, again, I didn't know anything about it. So they, I didn't see them as much because they had a house that was in College Town and I lived in North Campus. But you would see them occasionally. They would hold meetings on North Campus at Robert Purcell Union once a month. So I would see them occasionally. But then the only times I would see them were in a library or just throughout, you know, campus. And also going to RPU, which is the dining facility, I would go a lot. I saw a picture, a single picture that had two African Americans on it and a house in the middle. So then I looked at it because it seemed odd, out of place. I didn't see a lot of pictures with Black people up there. But that one stood out. And then I saw it, I later learned these were two founders of Alpha Phi Alpha, and it showed the first house that these guys lived in. So that was my first real introduction and understanding to Alpha Phi Alpha and the fact that it was founded at Cornell, because I would assume it would be founded at a HBCU. But it was, I learned about it was founded at Cornell. But since there were a number of fraternities, I did want to learn more about all the fraternities that I might have interest in. And I said I had narrowed it down to what are called the Divine Nine, members of the Divine Nine fraternities. I wanted to, because of the cultural relevance and things that I felt I had a connection to and could relate to. And I said I would go to all of their smokers, which were the introductory sections, to talk about the fraternity if you had an interest in it. And I started with Alpha first. And when I went there, the brothers introduced themselves, talked about what they were doing, talked about their interest, and they seemed to really have it all together. They were professional students who seemed very studious when they needed to be, but they can have a good time as well, sort of the work hard, play hard thing. And that was all she wrote for me. I said, this is it. I don't need to go to the rest. I think this is a good fit for me. I learned that the history book was in a library. I said I was going to learn more about the history book. And then when they finally had the opportunity for people who were interested in fraternity to let it be known, I expressed my interest, and the rest of this say is history. Fast forward, I did become a member of the fraternity in 1983 at Alpha Chapter at Cornell, and I held a number of positions, including community service chair, which I was most fond of. So while we were on campus, we did things like college tour to support the students at Ithaca High School, Black students, to take them on tours to see other colleges, blood drives, as well as brothers in the fraternity, supported one another academically, as well as supported students in downtown Ithaca, the high school students. The big brothers were mentors to me, and these included people like Frank Wilkinson, an architect student, people like Robert Smith, who's well-known Cornell alumnus now. He was one of the big brothers when I was there. So, and then fast forward, I kind of stayed active in the fraternity even after the time I graduated from Cornell, the second time, the law school, relocated to DC, didn't know anyone in DC, and looked for an alumni chapter and got connected with the local alumni chapter in Silver Spring, and kind of continued my involvement in the chapter to become president, as well as active in some of the activities in the general organization or national organization, including a national position I hold today, which is I am the president and chair of one of their special programs, which is called the Jules Heritage Project after our founders. And it is an effort to memorialize two residences that were important to and instrumental to the founding of the fraternity, 411 East State Street, which the house is no longer there. We're looking to build a monument at 411 East State Street, as well as 421 North Albany, which is also an important place for the founding of the fraternity, which is still standing. It's over 150 years old. And we just got it, helped to get it renovated because it was a condemned building. But now, through our efforts and the city efforts, we were able to push the owner to renovate the historic structure, get it designated a landmark, a site as well, and hopefully later on we might convince the owner to sell it to us to make it a community center as well as a museum, a national museum.
So you mentioned the house, Eric, and it's funny. I, as a resident of Ithaca, I went to Calvary Baptist Church and actually was a leader there, and the house is just a few doors down from the church. So I literally got to see that house every single day. And so for one, just to know how much history is there, but then to see and know that that is the history of my organization was definitely something I was honored to do. And every time I go back, I make sure I at least drive by the house, you know, so that I'm able to, you know, kind of relive just that aspect of our history, knowing that it's right there in the center of Ithaca. So I'm so glad that you're working towards those efforts to maintain not only that property for our organization, but as a historical landmark. So, Eric, since you mentioned one of the other organizations, I wanted to make sure that I did give a bit of a shout out to the other National Panhellenic Council organizations, our NPHC. These are the nine organizations that make up this council, and they are nine of the historically Black fraternities and sororities. They're not the only ones, but these are the kind of central ones that most folks recognize or know about. So again, of course, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated, Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated, and Iota Phi Theta Fraternity Incorporated, all of which have had a presence on our campus at one point or another. So, Eric, you mentioned one of our fellow alums, and one of our notable alums, Robert F. Smith, who is a philanthropist and successful businessman. We also can talk about other notable alphas such as Dr. Cornell West, David Deakins, Duke Ellington, and of course, many people will know, even if they didn't necessarily recognize he was an alpha, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who is also a brother of our organization, and the great work that they and other brothers have done to impact our world. So, Ernie, I'll come to you. What do you see as Alpha's impact on our country and our world now, given our history as an organization, given what we brought to the table? How do you see Alpha impacting our community in present day?
Yeah, so one of the things Alpha Phi Alpha is known for is developing leaders. And look through any industry, you're going to find an alpha somewhere, you know, leading an organization or making history somehow. So I'm in the business of government. I work, you know, as a public servant on Capitol Hill. As chief of staff to a Congress member who happens to be an alpha, Congressman Gregory Meeks, who was recently elected to be the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee and made history doing so as the first African-American to chair the Foreign Affairs Committee. So he'll be taking a leadership role in rebuilding some of our alliances abroad and reshaping how America is viewed globally. You know, so that's an alpha man that's in an important leadership role in government. You have brothers like Reverend Warnock, who made history recently by flipping Georgia blue and became the first African-American senator from that state and one of 11 in history. And he's going to, you know, make a lot of headway in reshaping, you know, the South and how the South is viewed, one that is more multicultural and inclusive than ever before. You have brothers in other leadership roles like Brother Bobby Scott, who is the chair of the Education and Workforce Committee in the House. So as President Biden establishes his policy priorities with respect to reshaping public education and shoring up labor rights, that brother is going to be at the forefront of that conversation. And recently, Brother David Scott, another brother from the South, was elected as chair of the Agriculture Committee, which means a lot for Americans, especially low and moderate income Americans who may rely on public assistance like the SNAP program, which all falls under the Ag Committee. But he may do some very important things when it comes to Black farmers who have often been shut out of government programs to help support farmers traditionally. So I don't think that's a coincidence. I think Alpha Phi Alpha truly does develop leaders, and you can go through any industry and find an Alpha brother there, you know, leading the way.
Brother Elmore?
Alphas, even when I didn't know, were influential in my life. I mentioned earlier, or was mentioned, that I became a lawyer. I went to Cornell Law School. No disrespect to Brother Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, but my absolute hero, the person who made it possible for people like Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, was Thurgood Marshall. When I found out he was an alpha, that was like, oh man, it was sort of, it really just sealed the deal that I had to join Alpha. Not because I would not succeed in my chosen field without it, but I thought I would love to be among other successful men who also wanted to give back and support and uplift the community. And the other organizations, Divine Nine members, do that as well. But for me, Alpha was the epitome of that. And the Alpha chapter at Cornell, those brothers were the epitome of that leadership and reaching back into the community, doing something selfless beyond themselves. And then when I found out more about Alpha's sort of national projects, it really spoke to that model of us grooming leaders to reach back into the community, like our Project Alpha, basically mentoring young Black men, Black boys, to achieve, to go on and excel, and to be role models to those Black men and Black families, as well as our Go to High School, Go to College national program too, which, as its name suggests, was very supportive of education and the need for our community to become educated and pursue higher education or their vocational fields, as well as the importance of us registering and actually voting in elections, which is no more, it was shown, you know, in the last election, the power of the Black vote in particular. I think too many times the Black community's vote was taken for granted. And this last election, I think, proved that it can no longer take advantage of the Black vote. And we have the initiative that we've had since almost the founding of our organization called A Voteless People is a Hopeless People. So almost at our inception, we were about developing leaders and lifting our community. And we have continued to do so today, as well as the other Divine Nine members as well. But I just think Alpha's has led in that effort.
Absolutely. I think for many, many individuals who may not have been familiar with, you know, Black fraternities and sororities, I think this election cycle, you know, they saw us a little bit more very differently. I know we've been doing A Voteless People as a Hopeless People for many years. This year, you know, specifically when we talk about, you know, Vice President Kamala Harris, who is also a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, you saw this kind of groundwell of some Divine Nine organization, specifically, of course, her sorority sisters, her sorors, who were out there, but all the Divine Nine, really, and not pushing a particular agenda, but again, helping to not only register, but educate individuals on, you know, voting and why it's important, and thinking about, you know, the history of the Voting Rights Act and things of that nature. I think those are all really important ways which our organizations, and specifically Alpha Phi Alpha, has engaged. And so as you look at that, and as we think forward, again, you know, we just on December 4th celebrated 114 years as an organization.
I want to ask you both where you see Alpha moving forward, both kind of on the large scale, but really thinking more specifically at Cornell. I look at the fact that our Alpha chapter brothers who are on campus are doing amazing work, and we see them serving in student leadership roles. I also look at members of the Alpha Chapter Alumni Association who are serving as volunteer leaders. Eric, you are the vice chair of Mosaic. We've got Frank Wilkinson, who is over our Alumni Multicultural Greek Letter Council, and even myself serving as the president of SIBA. I've seen Alpha continue to impact Cornell beyond just the undergraduate experience. So again, where do you see Alpha moving forward in general, but also more specifically as it pertains to our beloved Cornell?
First, I should mention that I had formative experience, enjoyed my experience at Cornell. Generally, I was involved in a lot of different activities. And I think a lot of that was because of the brothers at the in the fraternity, Alpha Chapter, supporting me in whatever I wanted to do. They didn't actually say, you do this or you do that. I think they tapped me because they saw the potential in me for leadership, and they just cultivated and supported that in terms of going in the areas. I was in student government. I was on the university hearing council when I was at Cornell. I mentioned I was in the Big Red Band. I was very active in so many. I was a Cornell ambassador. I wanted to go to law school, so I was in the Minority Undergraduate Law Society. I was in leadership role in that. I later became a member of the Quillen Dagger Honorary Society. Alpha pushed me to get involved in those various activities. And I see us continuing to do that. I think that's what we do best. We identify leaders and aspiring leaders. We cultivate them, but we also make sure that, like what was done for them in terms of Big Brothers and others reaching back to help them, that they should do the same, not only to members of the chapter, but to the greater community at Cornell and beyond. They knew I was interested in law school, so I think they put me in different positions and encouraged me in different ways to make sure that I would be able to go to law school, the things I should do, like go to Cornell and Washington and do those kinds of things. I should mention, when I ultimately did go to law school and graduate, I became a member of the largest organization for African-American lawyers, the National Bar Association. And my first convention, I got to meet my idol, Brother Thurgood Marshall. And when I got to meet him and shake his hand, and I mentioned that one of my professors was one of his clerks, he says, "Oh, you went to Cornell?" He's like, "Yeah." I said, "My fraternity was founded at Cornell." I said, "Yeah, so was mine." And, you know, then we exchanged the handshake, the Alpha handshake. And I got to tell you, I didn't want to wash that hand for like years, but that was always memorable to me. And that's what Alpha does. I mean, they just sort of reach back and support each other and support our community and inspire folks to do better, to recognize their own, you know, God-given potential. And hopefully we'll continue to do that as an organization. We're certainly doing that in my alumni chapter here in the D.C. metropolitan area.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would echo everything Brother Elmore said, and I'm just waiting for having that Alpha Phi Alpha president. That's what I'm looking forward to.
You know,
it might be you.
No, not me.
Well, you know, I think there's definitely that possibility there, Brother Joe.
So I do want to, you know, make sure I mention it and say this to our audience, but really to the both of you. You know, I appreciate the both of you and who you've been, not just to me, but to our institution, to our community. You know, I think about the fact that as a student, I saw you, Brother Elmore, coming to campus and visiting often, you know, checking in on students and making sure that we had the resources and the tools that we needed to be successful, but also, you know, just being a presence to say, "Hey, I've been through this before. I understand what you're going through, and you're going to make it out on the other side," which sometimes students really need to see, and they need to be able to know that those individuals are there. And it wasn't like, you know, we couldn't approach you if we weren't members of the organization, but you were really supportive to all students, and your work throughout the years has been monumental in pushing our community and Cornell forward. And then I look at, you know, now for me, 15 years out from Cornell, and getting to see your journey, Brother Jolly, as you continue on and do great things. You're leading us right now as the president of our Alpha Chapter Alumni Association, and just all the great work you're doing, not only for Cornell, for Alpha, but also in Washington in your role. I think it is a testament to the type of men who are a part of our organization. And I know from the bottom of my heart, I appreciate the both of you very much. And of course, appreciate the time that you've given to be a part of this conversation.
And so I ask you both one more question. This is the thing, again, I ask all of our guests, and this does not have to be related to the fraternity, but it can be if you would like. What is your favorite spot on campus?
I have so many favorite spots. So I might rattle off a couple, but the Alpha Rock is one of them. Sage Chapel, especially the memorial to those three men who were killed in Mississippi during the Freedom Ride, is another sacred place to me. And the War Memorial, and the view you can have of Cayuga Lake in one of those towers. I know there's dorms in there as well. It's a space that's special to me as well. And Africana Center. Preferred their library over everyone else's. So those are some of the special places for me. Okay.
Brother Elmore?
Well, it's hard when you got to come after that because I share many of those spots. And even though he said it, I'm not going to let him own it alone. I too appreciate the spot where the Phi Alpha landmark rock is, with the bench that's in the shape of a J of the jewels. That's a favorite spot. And it actually was my favorite spot before we placed the rock. It was during my time that the brothers in the 80s, we put that rock there. But that was my favorite spot before then, because that's where Willis Straight Hall is in the campus store. And, you know, Willis Straight Hall is famous for the 69 Straight takeover, which I think was instrumental to eventually allowing, you know, more open and diversity at Cornell, which allowed me to be there. So that, I think, by far is my favorite spot. I call it the Willis Straight Hall campus store, Alpha Phi Alpha monument area. Then there are a number of other spots that I like or favorite. Overlooking Uris Library, as you're looking down on Live Slope, you can oversee not only the West Campus Gothic Dawns, but Cayuga Lake. And it's just absolutely breathtaking to see that. And every time I go off the campus, I walk on that observation deck, which is above the library reading room, and to look over and see the old Gothic dorms as well as Cayuga Lake. That's a favorite spot as well, including also going into the Gothic dorms and the Quill and Dagger Tower, where you could actually look up to campus, up Live Slope, and see Uris Hall. And I've done many an all-nighter in the Q&D room where I watched the sun rise behind the Uris Library and Live Slope, and that's just beautiful. I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm so proud that I went to Cornell, because it's just breathtaking up there. And then, you know, there are a number of other spots, the Suspension Bridge, as well as the bridge coming on the campus from North Campus, as well as the bridge going to College Town. I know you said one, but it's Cornell. There's not just one favorite spot.
Right.
And if I could close with one remark, John, if you would permit, I want to be clear that while, you know, I love Alpha Phi Alpha and it was the perfect fit for me, there were so many different activities that people could do at Cornell. And that's what I loved about it, including joining the other organizations of the Divine Nine. And I once heard something that I think is absolutely true. I mean, we're all sort of come together to form a greater community to support one another. So while we all have our individual letters, those letters come together to form the words, to form the sentence, to tell the whole story. So, you know, we don't do it alone and we don't do it without each other. And that's important that we, you know, work together and stick together. So,
No, I absolutely agree. And I think that's one of the reasons why I love this history, because, you know, yes, it started at Cornell. You know, we were able to see what was at Cornell go to other organizations that were founded at Howard University, that were founded at Indiana, that were founded at Morgan, you know, and at that camaraderie and the need for that across the country really spread like wildfire to what we see today. As very much like you said, this community, this unified front, this unified force that is very, very important in our community. And I think this is a part of the reason why, again, I'm really glad that we were able to talk about this particular organization within the context of this series, because it, again, is a very important piece of Cornell Black history, but more so Cornell history on the whole. So I want to thank both of you so much for your time and participating. And thank you all for listening today. Please be sure to like, rate, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find out more information about Young Alumni programs and how to get involved at alumni.cornell.edu/youngalumni, and also by following the Facebook page at Young Alumni Programs. You can also learn more about the Cornell Black Alumni Association at cbaa1976.com, and follow us on all of our social media platforms at cbaa1976. Music from Fresh from the Hill was written, produced, and recorded by Kia Albertson Rogers, class of 2013. And you can contact him at KOA3 cornell.edu. If you have ideas for the podcast that you would like to share, please email our incredible producer, Amanda Massa, at amanda.massa, that's M-A-S-S-A, at cornell.edu. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we can't wait to see you again soon.